this afternoon. I wonder what passage he's going to take us to, or if he's just going to give us his opinions tonight. Well, since that doesn't qualify as preaching, what Bible passage would you go to? Obviously, you're going to have to go to passages that deal with general principles, right? To my knowledge, the word entertainment or recreation is never used in our English translation. So what passage with general principles could you go to? You have several options, Ryan. Okay, so if you're thinking about whether a particular form of entertainment is moral or immoral, the connection between your eyes and your heart. Good. Sarah? Yeah, Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Whatever is lovely, true, just. And we may come to some of these passages next week. Any others that you can think of, Ryan? Oh, okay, all right. That'll be a good one. And our passage will touch on money tonight. Present your bodies a living sacrifice. Don't be conformed to the world, because the world has a way of doing their entertainment and recreation that would be off limits for believers. These are good passages, and there's probably others that you could mention. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God, and many others. Three basic questions that I hope that this, what I anticipate, will be a two-part series tonight and next Sunday night, Lord willing. Three basic questions that it will answer. Number one, what is entertainment or recreation? And obviously, we're not going to derive that from a Bible passage. Second question, is entertainment valid for believers? And then number three, if so, what is the underlying principle that should guide our entertainment and recreation choices? Because when it comes to this area of recreation or entertainment, we have several things that we have to consider, of course, beyond just whether the particular form of entertainment is moral or immoral. And that's obviously a great place to start. Sarah mentioned Philippians 4:8. That's going to govern a lot of what we classify as entertainment. But entertainment is broader than just what we watch. What other aspects of entertainment or recreation might we be considering, besides whether it's moral or immoral? Yeah. You're right. How much of a time should it take? Should it take any of a believer's time? Doesn't Ephesians 5 say, redeem the time? So where does recreation or entertainment fit into redeeming the time, or can it fit into redeeming the time? It's a very valid question. So not only the content of it, but the time spent on it. Anything else? Okay. We need to get down to motivations and also purposes for recreation and entertainment. If it's valid for a believer, for what purposes? Can we misuse entertainment or recreation, even if the activity itself may be valid? So we'll have to ask questions about what does the word recreation mean? And it has the idea of recreating something in you. And what is that something? What's the purpose of recreation or entertainment, Ann? Okay, all right, so how do physical activities come into play in here, and are there certain hobbies and activities that are more God-honoring for a believer than others within the realm of those that are moral? These are great questions. It looks like you guys have been thinking about these things. Maybe you got it all figured out, and if so, that's great. This will just be review. I don't think that I have it all figured out, but hopefully we can dive into this a little bit together. The passage that I want to take you to was not one that I ever expected to use to exposit when we were coming to this study, but I think you'll see that it's probably a hugely foundational passage, and that's what I want to do tonight, is primarily focus on the theological foundation and then just touch on the nitty-gritty, and then next Sunday night really get down to some of these nitty-gritty questions. So let's go to 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3. We'll just give you a little preview of our first two questions. First question, what is entertainment or recreation? This isn't my definition. It's a paraphrase of of Dr. Brian Hand's definition. But recreation or entertainment could be defined something like this: filling idle time with activities intended to provide pleasure. Filling idle time with activities intended to provide pleasure or amusement. In other words, we might call it, how do you use your downtime when you're trying to have fun? I think that would cover what we would classify as entertainment or recreation, and it would cover all kinds of things, whether it's watching a movie, whether it's hanging out with friends, whether it's, for some ladies, shopping, or potentially men shopping, whether it's going hiking out in the mountains, whether it's going to play a round of golf, whether it's going to work out at the gym. For some ladies, it could be entertainment for them is sewing or whatever the case may be. But it's filling idle time with activities intended to provide pleasure. So it could be video games. It could be going to a hockey game. Depending on your personal interest, it might look different. But we all have some idle time, do we not? And we all fill our idle time with activities intended to amuse or to provide pleasure. That's entertainment or recreation in a nutshell. Second question, is entertainment valid for believers? If we are supposed to be redeeming the time, is entertainment even valid for believers? Is it a complete waste of time for somebody to go to a hockey game? And for hockey haters, don't answer the question, all right? I'm not really on either side of that fence. I just use it as an illustration. Is it even valid for a believer to go down to a hockey game on Friday night and to spend who knows how much money? Maybe you're up in the nosebleeds. And so you spend, say, $80 for a couple tickets and maybe some snacks there. Is it valid for a believer to spend $80 and to blow several hours of a Friday night or a Saturday night on a hockey game? Well, we're starting to get down to analyzing specific entertainment and recreation choices. So let's take a step back a little more generally. Is recreation or entertainment valid for a believer in principle? You're scared to answer, aren't you? I would suggest that yes, it is. Yes, it is. With a bunch of disclaimers. What are those disclaimers? Well, you'll have to come back next week. You can probably already think of many of them already. I would say entertainment is valid for believers within a couple guidelines. One would be God-given parameters. In other words, what's morally right or wrong? Obviously, anything that falls outside of God's moral will is inappropriate for a believer for entertainment or recreation. And I do believe there's a difference between, at times, what you do for entertainment versus what you do for work or the situation you put yourself in. For instance, and you have to be wise in this, I think there's a difference in where you might work and what you subject yourself to, in other words, language at work, versus what you subject yourself to for entertainment. So at work, you're probably going to hear some profanity, even if you're working in a professional setting. And you obviously have to gauge for yourself whether it's a toxic influence on you or not. But you're going to hear some things at work that you would not, as a believer, be able to subject yourself to for entertainment or recreation purposes. So there are God-given parameters, first of all, and there are also, secondly, God-focused priorities. God-focused priorities. What do you mean by that? Well, we'll dive into that a little bit more next week. God-given parameters and God-focused priorities. And within those two criteria, I do believe that entertainment and recreation has a limited place in a believer's life, though an important. What are some of the dangers of entertainment for believers? Obviously, there are unrighteous entertainment, things that are immoral, off-limits, for instance. Anything that's making fun of sin would have to be off-limits for a believer, correct? anything that's unrighteous or immoral by God's standards. Two, things that would waste time would be off limits for a believer. Three, things that create addiction or dependence, even if they're valid in and of themselves, would have to be off limits for a believer. So a person who can't stop doing this particular hobby or activity, they're just almost like, I can't get enough of it, and they just go on for hours and hours and hours. That would obviously be off limits for a believer. And using entertainment or recreation to try and escape reality, to ignore reality, would be an illegitimate use of entertainment. So that's just a little bit of a snapshot of where we'll go next week. But question three is what I want to focus on tonight. What is the Bible principle underlying our entertainment and recreation choices? I think we have a huge one here in 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3, Paul writes to his young pastor friend Timothy and says in verse 1, "But realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good," verse 4, "treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness, though they have denied its power. Avoid such men," or such people as these. Say, what does that have to do with entertainment? I think it'll become clear as we quickly work through this passage. He warns Timothy and he warns us that in the last days, difficult times will come. That phrase, last days, is an important New Testament concept because we have to try and determine, are we living in the last days or the last days yet to come? And I think as you study that phrase, we come to the conclusion that in some sense we are living in the last days right now. Right now. It seems to refer to the time in between Christ's first coming and Christ's second coming, His return. And the New Testament writers classify that as the last days. You say, well, that's thousands of years, and that's true, but in God's economy, that's not a very long time. And it does seem to teach that there will be periods of time within these last days between Christ's first coming and His return for the church, that there will be periods of time in these last days where it will be worse than other times. And it seems that as we get closer to the return of the Lord, things will continue to get progressively worse and worse. So He's giving us a snapshot of what unbelievers are like now and how it's going to continue to slide and to slide and to slide. We should expect that it's going to be this way, apart from probably pockets of revival that God may choose to send. So, are we living in the last days? Yes, we are. Because we're living in that time period between Christ's first coming and His second coming. So we need to be aware of what these days will be like. He describes these last days as difficult times. And why are they difficult? They're difficult because of the character and nature of people during those days. The character and nature of unbelievers during those days will not only make it difficult for us as believers, it will also tempt us to join them in their ways. So he describes them as difficult and hard days because of how people will be during those last days. And so in verse 2, he uses that connecting word for. So he's explaining to us, you could also translate that because. Why are they going to be difficult days? Why? Because men will be this way. Why are they difficult? Because of what people will be like. And that's hard on a believer. Remember righteous Lot? What did it say about righteous Lot? That he was grieved by the wicked behavior of unbelievers around him, but he didn't do much to change it. So he was grieved. And once in a while, I'll hear somebody say, you know, I was watching a movie the other day, and oh, it just grieved me, the language that they're using. Well, did you turn it off? No, I just kept watching it. You weren't that grieved, were you? Righteous Lot was grieved, but it didn't make much of a difference in his life. He says, the days will be difficult. And the word that's translated men there, it's the general word for people, for human beings. So I think it's more than just guys like Pastor Michael will be bad guys. The male gender will be bad. It's people in general will be this way. And he'll go on, and later on in the chapter, he'll give a specific example and he'll apply this to false teachers. But right here in these verses, I think the focus is broad enough that he backs up a little bit and he takes the focus that this is what people in general will be like. Not just false teachers, but unsaved people in general. And not every unbeliever will be filled with each of these things, but we can expect every unbeliever to be characterized by some of these things, if not many of these things. So this will be a description of your coworkers, your unsaved neighbors. And he starts by saying it'll be difficult because people will be, first of all, lovers of self. Lovers of self. And what you see in this passage several times is you see the word philo for love or affection for attached to another word. You know, Philadelphia is supposed to mean the city of brotherly love. I'm not sure there's a lot of brotherly love there. But he says these men will be philos of themselves. They will be lovers, have strong affection for themselves. For themselves. Three types of love here that will characterize unbelievers, and this is what I think holds this entire passage together. Three types of misplaced love. First of all, a love of self. First of all, a love of self. What does that mean? We would describe it this way. People will be self-centered, selfish people. They'll be looking out for their interests, for their desires. And why does Paul list that sin first? Because I personally believe that it's the sin that all the other sins flow from in this list. All other 17 vices in this list flow from this number one problem, and the number one problem is that unbelievers love themselves. They're selfish and self-focused. They express it different ways depending on their particular desires, but all unbelievers are lovers of themselves. They are selfish, they are self-centered. All these other sins flow from this self-focus. So when our love for God as a believer begins to imitate this love, this misguided love of unbelievers, and it gets replaced with love for self, then we can expect these other 17 distortions to show up. Maybe not all of them, but some of them will. Misplaced love leads to poor character and consequently poor choices. And that'll affect our entertainment and recreation choices. So he says, love of self is the issue. A second type of love that flows from love of self. What comes next in the list? Lovers of money. Remember what Paul told Timothy early in 1 Timothy 6:10, that well-known verse, for the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. People will do almost anything to get money. So, principle is that if I replace love for God with love for myself, I'm going to make wrong choices in recreation and entertainment. If I get my focus off of love for God and I get it on love of myself, then I'm invariably going to make wrong choices in entertainment. What's our purpose as believers? Our purpose as believers is to love God with all our hearts and to love those that He's created just as much as we love ourselves. And if our purpose is to love God, then the purpose of my recreation and my entertainment has to be what? To show love to God. And I don't think I'm overstepping overstepping biblical teaching on this, but it's not something we generally think of. Okay, what am I going to do on my day off? Well, what can I do to show love for God? That's got to be the guiding, underlying theological principle in our recreation choices. Should I go hang out with my friends this weekend or should I do something else? Well, what can I do to show love for God? And it may be that the best way you can show love for God right now is to go hang out with your friends. I remember we had a basketball coach in college. And once you had committed to the team, you needed to be all in. And he would tell us on occasion, his name was Charles, huge Hawaiian fellow, one of my best friends, from the island of Oahu, just hilarious. And he would say something like this, "Guys, the most spiritual thing you can be doing right now is doing your best and playing basketball." Now you say you have to make the decision at the forefront, is basketball the best way to show love for God during this time? And that's a valid question. But if you're doing something that you believe honors the Lord and that He would want you to do in showing love to Him, then doing your best on it is the right and appropriate action. But if our purpose is to love God, our recreation must help us to love God more. So what am I saying? I'm saying this. Our recreation must be God-loving, not self-loving. My recreation choices must be God-loving, not self-loving. My recreation must be God-focused, not self-focused. You say, well, what does that mean I'm going to do? Does that mean on my day off I'm going to call Pastor Michael and pray on the phone with him for hours? Probably not. So what kind of recreation and entertainment would be God-loving and God-focused, not self-loving and self-focused? Well, he tells us, first of all, this love of self, by way of application, we would say, would distort our recreation choices. Second love that will distort our recreation choices is a love of money. A love of money. Interestingly enough, what's the only group of people in the New Testament that were classified as lovers of money? Specifically identified. It's the Pharisees. The Pharisees were the only group, and they were the religious leaders, strangely enough. Paul has told Timothy earlier in 1 Timothy 3:3 that a pastor must be a man who is free from the love of money. He encourages all believers in Hebrews 13:5. He says, keep your life free from the love of money. And what's the reason for it? God's going to take care of you. Well, what does this have to do with loving self? I thought you said all this flows from love of self. Well, I think love of money does flow from a love of self, right? A materialistic person, a person who loves money, is just evidencing a high love of self. This is what I think is going to satisfy me. Plus, if my recreation choices turn into a love of myself, I'm probably going to choose things that maybe I can't afford or shouldn't be spending money on, so I'm going to need money to fuel my recreation habit. So a love of money is closely connected to a love of myself. I'll need money to pay for what I want, or I'll accumulate stuff to gratify myself, to gratify my selfish desires. So a love of self will secondly lead to a love of money. Drop down to verse 4 for the last love that's identified in this passage. And I think love is the key idea of the passage, or a lack of love. In the end of verse 4, he says that in the last days, people will be characterized by being lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Gratifying self becomes more important than pleasing God. What I want becomes more important than what God wants. And so if I want to do this weekend, I'm going to do it and nobody's going to stop. Have you ever been sitting there participating in some form of entertainment or recreation, and it's completely moral. It's not an immoral thing at all. It's not unethical. It's completely moral. But you know that there's something else you need to be doing in order to show love to God, and your conscience is prodding you. And despite the conscience prodding you, you basically make up your mind, I'm going to do this as long as I want to do. You ever been there? It happens. Why does it happen? Because I can, like an unbeliever, start to love pleasure more than I love God Himself. So how does the list start? It starts with love of self. How does the list end? It starts with love of self, love of pleasure more than love of God. Because why do they love pleasure? Because they're gratifying themselves. They're doing what they think they need to do. So the list starts with self-love and it ends with self-love. They're like bookends explaining what the fundamental problem is. Misguided love and all other 15 of them in between flow from a love of self. So if my love for God becomes weak, my love for self becomes strong, and then my love of pleasure almost becomes insatiable. You see the connection with recreation? If my relationship with the true God doesn't stay right, then I'm going to end up loving pleasure rather than loving God, or more than loving God. And so my choices will be wacky. They'll be off kilter. There's no way for them to be right. Well, what are some of these other vices and sins that go along with self-love? I'll just highlight four of them. One, in verse 2, he says, they will become, and I'm just picking out a few of them here for our purposes tonight, they will become ungrateful. Ungrateful. Well, can you see how that can happen with somebody who becomes dominated by recreation and entertainment? I've got to get more and more. I've got to do this weekend. This is the way your coworkers are, right? What's their favorite day of the week? Why? Monday. No, it's not Monday. What's their favorite day of the week? Friday. Why? Recreation, entertainment, enjoyment. Not because they're going to the highlight of their week on Sunday and worshiping God. It's so that they can fuel their self-gratification, whatever form that takes. And what happens? People like that become ungrateful. Because I don't have enough. I don't have enough money. My boss won't give me enough time. My spouse won't give me enough leeway to let me do what I want to do. God hasn't given me enough. They become ungrateful. They become unthankful. If you see an ingratitude creeping up in your heart, you might want to check to see, am I loving myself? Another effect, another vice that flows from self-love. I'll just throw this one out here because we have a lot of kids here tonight. Disobedient to parents. Oh no, I was hoping you were going to skip that one. Disobedient to parents. I want to do this. My friends are doing this. I've got to do this. And I'm going to do it. And my parents aren't even going to stop me. Nobody's going to stop me. You ever done that before, kids? I remember a time as a teenager when my buddy Kyle had invited me over to spend the night and we would always have a great time. But my parents didn't want me to do it. And it was obvious. But they weren't going to. It was one of those where, okay, you can do it. We're not really in favor of it, but we're going to let you make the choice. You're growing up, and they didn't say it that way. But that's essentially what they were saying. We're not in favor of it, but you can do it. There wasn't anything immoral about it that I can recall or unethical. And so what did I do? I pushed. I probably, Lord knows, I hope not, but I might have gotten to the point where I'd have been willing to disobey my parents to get what I want in that specific case. What else? He says right after, ungrateful, unholy. If self-gratification, self-love becomes the key, then I'll at some point be willing to do entertainment and recreation that's unholy to gratify myself. Verse 3. The result of this self-love is that, he describes there in the middle of verse 3, they will lack self-control. They won't have self-control. Literally, the word is without strength. In other words, it seems like they can't say no to sin. They lack the character to say no to temptation. They can't say no, it seems. Why? Because they're pleasing themselves. And so the time that they spend on entertainment will just balloon to huge amounts of time, and they can't seem to say no to it. I don't want to do this, but I just keep putting time and time and time and time. Why is that? Well, when you love yourself, you grow to a place where you lack self-control to say no. Or maybe the content of the entertainment will become unholy because they seem to lack strength to say no to temptation. It's like I'm helpless. I just can't say no. Why? Because I started by loving myself. When you start with loving yourself, eventually you're going to lack self-control to say no to temptation. And one interesting one I'll point out here, last one. Verse 4 tells us that they will become conceited. Literally puffed up. They'll become proud. Self-love always leads to pride because it shows who I've been looking out for anyways. So what's the underlying principle here? The underlying principle, I think, from 2 Timothy 3 is that if my recreation and my entertainment choices are motivated by a self-focus, I will go astray. And either spending too much time on it or indulging in things that are off limits for me as a believer. If my recreation is motivated by self-focus and self-love, I will go astray. But if my purpose is to love God and to glorify God in whatever I do, then even my recreation choices will take a God-focused perspective. And what will that look like? Well, for you, it may be different than it is for me. Because what is invigorating for me and refreshing for me and restful for me and enjoyable for me may not be enjoyable at all for you. It might be the last thing on earth you wanted to do on a day off. So there's flexibility and there's freedom of enjoyment. And God's not going to stifle enjoyment. We find in Ecclesiastes, he says, enjoy the blessings of life. 1 Timothy 5, he says, God has given us all things richly to enjoy within God-given parameters and within biblical priorities. So how then do we begin making specific choices and applying God-given parameters and God-given priorities to our entertainment decisions? That's next Sunday night, God willing. You say, how ironic that you're preaching this right before the men's camping trip. Do you think that the men's camping trip is a violation of the wise use of recreation? And I would suggest, I don't think so. Let's talk about it more next Sunday night. Lord, thank you for all the believers here. It's wonderful encouragement to have so many here tonight anticipating what you would teach them from your word. And Lord, some of them have it figured out better than I do in understanding the biblical principles. So I pray wherever we are on our understanding, we would all be willing to take our hands off of our recreation and entertainment and be willing to say to you, Lord, if you show me from your word that I am not practicing it in a biblical way, whatever the activity, whatever the time, no matter how much I love it, I'm willing to give it up for you or cut back. Lord, make us all willing to say that. Because we want to love you in our entertainment and not ourselves. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.